transgress some sort of cultural boundary?
I am sorry, he began, instinctively crouching, drawing low to minimize his size. I meant no disrespect.
Naha rocked on the balls of his feet, and the Kelpian thought the young male would respond. But the crowd began to break apart, drawing away. The elevator platform was coming back down, and Saru's heart sank as he saw a familiar figure riding it, a figure in a dark blue uniform with flashes of bronze down the flanks. The platform clanked to a halt, and Lieutenant Commander Johar stepped off, his eyes wide. Saru couldn't help but notice the engineer had one hand very close to the grip of the phaser on his belt.
"Lieutenant," he snapped, "you've got some explaining to do."
"Sir?" Saru's fingers curled in the air. "I have a very good reason—"
"Not to me," Johar retorted, and beckoned him closer. "Come on, neither of us are supposed to be here. Let's not complicate this any more than you already have."
Irritation flared in the Kelpian's eyes. Just as before, he was in danger of being dragged away before he could make a breakthrough.
"Sir," he said more forcefully, "I am trying to fulfill our mission."
Johar lowered his voice so that only Saru could hear him, keeping one eye on the silent Gorlans gathered around them.
"Look, I know this situation is a complex one, and I don't disagree with your intentions. Your methods are ill-considered, but I get what you're trying to do here."
Saru opened his mouth to speak, but Johar kept talking.
"None of that has any bearing on our orders. We have to go."
"There's more happening here than what we are aware of," Saru insisted.
"I don't doubt it," Johar shot back. "But we have stuck our noses in far enough."
He jerked his head toward the elevator and put his hand on his weapon.
"Do I need to make it an order, or do I have to stun you and drag you back unconscious?"
"I'd prefer the former. It'd be a pain in the backside, hauling you into the shuttle."
"You would do that?"
Saru guessed that Johar was only half joking about the last statement. At length, he gave a weary nod, feeling a great weight pressed down on him.
"I have failed."
A sting of inward-directed anger followed.
"What was I thinking? I am not Burnham. This isn't my way."
"What's this?"
Johar's question drew Saru's attention back. The chief engineer was looking over the Kelpian's shoulder toward the enclosure where Vetch had gone. The speaker had emerged again, this time with a group of 5 Gorlan males walking in lockstep behind him. All of them wore the red bands Saru had seen before. Vetch ignored him and wandered over to Johar, invading the human's personal space. The Gorlan made no attempt to hide his interest in the phaser on the other officer's belt. He peered at it and licked his lips.
"Excuse us. We'll be going now," said Johar, backing off toward the elevator.
He threw Saru a look. The human didn't need to be able to feel aura fields to sense the sudden sense of threat in the air.
"Agreed."
Saru took a last look over his shoulder and saw one of the red bands share a word with Naha. The older Gorlan had some similarities in skin tone and hair color with the youth, and Saru wondered if they were related. Naha reacted sharply to whatever was said to him and stepped away, never meeting Saru's questioning gaze as he melted into the crowd. Saru felt a sudden tension in the flesh at the back of his skull, and his threat ganglia distended as the danger made itself apparent.
"Something is wrong."
The ghostly electrostatic aura scratched at the skin of the Kelpian's bare hands, and that was when he saw the weapon in the other Gorlan's grip. An energy pistol of some kind, with the fluted emitter characteristic of a disruptor. The universal translator spat out a garbled, unreadable noise as the armed Gorlan shouted a word, the sound hard and sharp with the unmistakable timbre of a command. The other red bands produced weapons of their own, some of them like the disruptor, others more rudimentary blades that were no less lethal. Vetch moved in a flash, snatching Johar's phaser from his belt and dancing back out of his reach. Saru spun to find a wicked-looking dagger up at his throat, held by a muscular red band who stood as tall as the gangly Kelpian's chest. The other Gorlan, the one that had spoken to Naha and given the command, came over and took Saru's gear, removing his weapon and his communicator. It was only when he reached for the rod-like universal translator and Saru's tricorder that the Kelpian attempted to block him. "Please, do not take those. They are very complex." Saru made a motion at his mouth. "We need them to converse. Do you understand?" Vetch made no effort to intervene, and the red band took the devices regardless.
"You get trouble," the speaker said, walking towards Saru. "I told you."
Vetch took the rod-like translator and turned it over in his stubby fingers, examining the function controls.
"I keep this."
"Return our equipment and step aside."
Johar spoke slowly and clearly.
"We just want to leave."
"Not happen,"
Vetch replied, and he gestured to one of the red bands holding a disruptor pistol. The Gorlan moved in and pointed the weapon at the engineer's chest.
"You help Peliars. Now, you help Gorlans."
Saru shook his head. "We have done so, and there was no need to threaten us. My captain gave you medicines."
"That's not the kind of thing he's talking about, Lieutenant," Johar said gravely.
"Walk."
Vetch pointed back at the elevator platform.
"Or there will be pain for you."
The Gorlans forced their two hostages to stand in front of them as the platform rose once again, swiftly climbing out of the cargo modules and through the hull spaces of the freighter. Twice, Johar tried to turn his head for a sideways look at Vetch and the red bands, but on each occasion they noticed him watching and jabbed him in the back with Saru's phaser. All he got a glimpse of was one of them pulling an access panel off the side of the elevator's control podium, exposing the glowing wires within. He understood why when the lift rattled past the level where he had first boarded it and continued to rise at a fast clip, bypassing the ship's engineering spaces and ascending on toward the bow. Johar's thoughts raced. From the piecemeal scans the Shenzhou had made of the Peliar cargo carrier, he knew that the massive vessel's command and control decks were situated in the forward sections of the craft, and the prospect of an armed assault with him and Saru as living shields led inexorably to one conclusion. Vetch and his red band companions were on their way to take over the ship. The way the Gorlans moved, the speed and the purpose behind their actions, all of it told him that this was something that they had planned and prepared for. Perhaps they had always meant to involve the Starfleet team, or perhaps the rescue party from the Shenzhou had accidentally walked into their scheme and forced them to trigger it early. It didn't matter now. The chief engineer and the junior science officer were caught up in the unfolding events, and their chances of getting out unharmed diminished with each passing second. Johar kept his gaze fixed on the bulkheads flashing past on the other side of the elevator platform's mesh screen doors, but from the corner of his eye he could see Saru shifting nervously from foot to foot, his hooved boots scraping on the deck plates.
"Calm down,"
whispered Johar out of the side of his mouth.
"Do you think they are going to kill us?"
Saru hissed back, reaching up gingerly to massage his ganglia into the back of his head.
"If they wanted us dead, they would have dealt with us down in the cargo compartment."
Johar shook his head.
"Besides, our phasers are set for stun."
"Do they know that?"
Saru eyed him.
"Disruptors and daggers don't have that functionality, sir."
The Kelpian let out a weak sigh.
"This is my fault. I should never have come back here."
Johar decided there was little to be gained right now by apportioning blame and ignored the comment.
Nothing has happened yet that can't be taken back.
He spoke loudly enough for Vetch to hear him.
There's still time to talk about this like reasonable beings.
The words had barely left his mouth before Vetch was prodding him in the shoulder with the flat head of his stolen weapon.
Human say reason? Reason gone far ago.
Saru glared at the Gorlan.
When you came to our ship, you told Captain Giorgio that everything was calm between your kind and the Pelears. Was that a lie?
Words for them, not you,
Vetch said dismissively. Now I make use.
The elevator began to slow.
Interfere, and there will be pain, he added.
Saru looked to Johar.
Sir?
Follow my lead, he told him, as the platform finally emerged in the middle of the freighter's command tier.
The engineer only got a quick glimpse of things, barely getting his bearings before the mesh slid back, and the Gorlans shoved the two Starfleet officers out in front of them. The bridge of the Pelear Starfreighter was a windowless oval chamber with a curved ceiling, and at one end there was a raised platform where Nathal stood, her face a picture of shock at the sight of the unexpected arrivals. Hekan and the other senior crew were all in front of their podiums, working haptic control interfaces for the big ship's primary systems. Many of the consoles were unmanned, suggesting that the vessels were constructed with a far larger crew in mind.
No move!
Vetch shouted the words at the top of his voice, waving the phaser in the air.
Back! Go back! Resist, and pain comes!
The Gorlans spilled out of the elevator shaft, each of them menacing a different member of the crew. Most of the Pelears did as they were told, but Commander Nathal was not cowed by the naked display of aggression. She strode down to the lower level, ignoring the red band who threatened her, and fixing Vetch with a venomous glare.
You dare to do this? After all we've done for you?
She came at the Gorlan speaker.
Ungrateful creatures!
Back!
As Vetch shouted the word at her, the red band who had taken Saru's phaser fired a shot into the deck at Nathal's feet. She staggered back, as if she had never expected them to go that far.
You better do as they say, said Johar, playing for time.
Nathal turned her ire on the two Starfleet officers.
You are the cause of this! Did we not tell you to stay away from them? Do you see now? Your interference has stirred them to violence!
We did not make this happen, Saru blurted out.
We came to help you, all of you. And that has been of such benefit, Nathal spat back. Aid us now, then. Rid my ship of these criminals.
No, Gorlan crime,
barked Vetch, baring his teeth.
You, Pelear, your crime.
I never wanted this mission, said Nathal, but I accepted it because I do my duty. I overlooked my dislike of these outworlders.
She cut the air with the blade of her hand.
I was wrong to ignore my instincts.
You always hate.
Vetch glared back at her.
Gorlan see. Gorlan know.
Johar took a step forward, trying to interpose himself between the two beings.
Listen to me. Whatever ill feelings you both have toward each other, it doesn't need to be debated at the barrel of a gun.
Nathal gave a sneering grunt.
You're wasting your breath on these primitives. Look at them. Violence is all they know.
You made us.
Vetch clasped two of his hands around his stolen phaser, the other pair bunching into fists.
Drove us to this. Animals!
The shout came from one of Nathal's men, the crewman named Dekaz, and Johar saw him pull something from a storage locker in the base of one of the podiums. Dekaz's hand came back up with a clutch-grip needle laser in his fist, and he fired, stitching a fine thread of brilliant red light through the air. The beam sliced through the upper biceps of one of the red bands, and the Gorlan let out a piercing scream. Then all hell broke loose as the would-be hijackers hit back. The emerald crackle of disruptor bolts spat from multiple weapons, striking down two of the Pelear crew in the first salvo. Johar dove forward, desperately trying to find cover behind a console, aware that Saru was close by. But the lanky Kelpian was just over 2 meters tall, and he presented a large, obvious target. The engineer saw the injured red band turn, the heavy shape of an energy weapon cradled in three of his hands, swinging to point at the science officer's back.
Saru!
Johar reacted without thinking, throwing himself at his crewmate, shoving him out of the way as the Gorlan pulled the trigger. Green fire filled his vision, and suddenly Johar's entire body was an inferno as the nerve-shredding discharge of the disruptor hit rippled across him. The horrific, heart-stopping agony engulfed the engineer, and he sank into it, swallowed by darkness. Saru was not a stranger to death. His people were born with an innate sense of it, an almost preternatural capacity for sensing the immediacy of the end of life. Death is the shadow at the heels of every Kelpian born. It was an old axiom taught to him from childhood as he listened to elders tell cautionary tales of those who died of foolishness, of inattention, of curiosity. Saru had never forgotten those words, even though time had taken him far from his home, countless light-years distant from the hunter beasts upon it. Some among his crewmates on the Shenzhou thought him to be morbid, even fatalistic, in the way in which a shadow lurked behind his every waking moment, his every thought and action. They didn't understand that the reverse was true. Saru's certainty that danger and death awaited him did not shade his life in morose tones. It made him all the more determined to live it, down to the very last second. The grotesque odor of seared skin entered his olfactory slits, and he grimaced as he turned over Lieutenant Commander Johar's body. An ugly wound had melted together flesh and fabric across the engineer's torso, the shock effect of the near hit from the weapon leaving a spiderweb of damaged blood vessels over the man's dark skin. Had the bolt struck him squarely, his end would have been instant. Johar was alive, but the shadow of death was passing over him. He would not last long without medical attention. He saved my life. The realization was stark and harsh, a blinding light in Saru's thoughts. I didn't think he liked me.
Move! Move now!
The shouted command brought him crashing back, and Saru looked up to see the red band with the white-streaked hair pointing a weapon at him. At his side, Vetch was jabbing his fists in the air, crowing over their victory. The brief firefight had ended as quickly as it began. Johar and another of Nathal's officers were the only wounded, but Saru now saw there had been deaths as well. 2 Pelear crewmen in the silver vests of their security detail. Vetch sniffed, giving Johar's bloodless face a brisk once-over.
Unfortunate. This one is ended.
Not yet!
A burst of indignant anger propelled Saru to his full height, and he hauled Johar off the deck.
Where are the others from our shuttle? What have you done with them?
Around him, the Gorlans were herding the remaining Pelear command crew into a tight cluster, backing Nathal and the others against the far wall. Vetch watched them work, then made an idle nod.
Below, unharmed. There is value to them.
But not to this man?
Saru glared at the Gorlan as he held Johar up.
Not to me?
Unfortunate.
Repeated Vetch, throwing a sideways look at the injured red band who had almost killed the engineer.
I need to take the commander to our medic, Saru went on. Otherwise he will die, and you will personally be responsible.
The white-haired Gorlan orbited close to the conversation and snarled something quick and forceful. Vetch chattered back at him, and Saru guessed he was translating for his comrade. Another of the Gorlands went to a nearby control podium and activated an exterior scanner display.
"This agreed," said Vetch. "Take Saru's man below. After you help."
Saru's blood chilled as the other Gorlan came over and took Johar from him. "I will not assist you in endangering any more of this ship's crew."
"Not this ship."
Vetch waved toward the Gorlan at the console, and the holographic panel above it illuminated with an image of the Shenzhou, the vessel floating at station keeping a few thousand meters off the Pelear freighter's bow. Indicators that could only be the targeting cues for the freighter's weapons array danced over the length of the Shenzhou, moving back and forth, ready to lock on and fire.
"No,"
said Saru, feeling the color drain from his face.
"We leave now, but no chase, not to be followed."
Vetch pointed at the Shenzhou.
"Help us stop this following."
Where his finger met the hologram, the weapons chose a target. The aiming cues flicked across the crew decks, the underslung bridge, the main deflector.
"You choose best, or we choose all."
Vetch opened his hand, and the entire length of the Shenzhou lit up with potential hit points. Saru felt sick inside as a terrible choice unfolded before him. An unexpected strike on any one of those locations would result in massive loss of life. But a carefully targeted shot could be sent somewhere that might cripple the ship and injure no one.
"You help,"
grunted the white-haired Gorlan, aping Vetch's earlier words. His hand trembling, Saru slowly reached up to touch the display.
"What the—"
The half-formed question fell from Cameron Gant's mouth, and his brow furrowed as the blip on the tactical display panel appeared and disappeared in the space of an indrawn breath.
"Problem, Lieutenant?"
The Shenzhou's first officer caught the muttered words from halfway across the bridge, and in two quick strides the Andorian was at Gant's station.
"How does he do that?" Gant wondered. "Has to be those antennae of his. Or maybe it's like Connor says. He really does have eyes in the back of his head."
"I'm not sure, sir."
He ran a quick scanning macro to check the starship's tactical systems for any kind of anomalous readings.
"For a second, I thought there was a low-power sensor beam out there."
Chitalo glanced at the wallowing Pelear transport through the main viewport.
"From them?"
"It's—"
Gant started to explain when the blip suddenly returned, once more blinking on and then off.
"There it is again."
"I saw."
The commander leaned over the console.
"Could the sensors be picking up a radiation artifact, something left over from the Nadion pulse?"
"Possible."
Gant looked up across the bridge to Ensign Troke at the science station.
"Are you seeing this too?"
"Gentlemen?" Captain Georgiou put down the cup of tea she had been drinking and gave her crew a sideways look.
"Potential sensor anomaly, Captain," said Chitalo.
No, it isn't," corrected Troke, tapping the neural implant at his neck. "It's coming from the Pelear vessel, but not powerful enough for a full-blown scanner emission." The Andorian threw the Tulian a brisk nod.
"Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Troke."
"Could it be a communication?" said the captain. "Like the line-of-sight laser we've been using with the Yang?"
"Why would it be bouncing all over the hull?" said Chitalo.
"They're bad at aiming?"
Gant said the words without thinking, and his breath stuck in his throat as his mind caught up with his mouth, the solution to the mystery abruptly revealing itself.
"It's not sensors! It's a targeting sweep!"
As he spoke, a flicker of warning icons appeared down the length of the Shenzhou's twin warp nacelles, zeroing in on the intercoolers and magnetomic flux arrays that were vital to the vessel's faster-than-light drive system.
"Confirmed! Alien ship is locking on to us!" Ensign Detmer called out from the helm console in alarm.
"They're charging weapons!"
Gant heard himself give the report.
"Red alert!" ordered Jojo. "Tactical! Raise the—"
Blood-crimson light doused the chamber, and Gant's hand was already on the activation control for the Shenzhou's deflector shields when the attack came. But it was too late. A blinding storm of phase cannon bolts ripped past the lower tier of the ship's primary hull, and the crew reacted, turning away from the firestorm. An instant later, the precisely aimed salvo cut into the starship's engines and blew through the nacelles, sending a cascading shock down through the warp coils in stormy flashes of vented plasma. Gant shook against his station as a rumble of tormented metal vibrated back up the engine pylons and through the Shenzhou's saucer-like fuselage. Across his alert board, impact markers bloomed in a line of orange and yellow icons. Power, light, and gravity briefly dropped away as the vessel rolled with the blow, like a street fighter shaking off a sucker punch. He tried to tap into the auxiliary power, desperate to route energy to the shields. If the surprise attack was the opening blow in a sustained assault, they had to be ready for another hit. The lightheadedness from the low-G surge went away, and the red lights glowed once more.
"Warp drive is offline."
Lieutenant Oliveira had taken an early shift to cover the bridge's engineering station, and Gant had to wonder if the young Brazilian woman was now regretting it.
"Captain, that attack was surgical. They knew exactly where to hit us." "Fan, can you reach our people on the shuttle?"
Giorgio shot a look toward the communications officer, but the young woman could only shake her head.
"Shields? Weapons?"
The first officer stalked back toward Gant's panel, his face like thunder.
"Can we return fire?"
Gant stifled a curse.
"Power is intermittent. I've got 30% on the forward deflector array, but it's that or phasers, sir. I can't give you both."
"Helm, back us off one quarter impulse," said the captain.
Detmer scowled.
"Impulse drive is not responding. Thrusters only, Captain. Do your best, Kayla."
"Yes, Captain."
The ensign complied, using the maneuvering jets to extend the distance between the Starfleet vessel and the bigger ship.
"Why did they shoot at us?"
At Detmer's side stood Ensign Yanuzi, his dark face a mask of confusion.
"We were no threat to them."
"They hit us while we were looking the other way," Chithalo said grimly. "Because that is the only way they could wound us. Cowards!"
Gant nodded to himself. The Andorian was right. The Pelear's ship's weapons systems were basic, even compared to those of an older class of cruiser like the Shenzhou. Had they been at combat readiness, the shots that knocked out the nacelles would have been repulsed. But now, none of that meant a damned thing. As well as phase cannon turrets, the Pelear ship carried a cluster of Merculite rocket pods that would make short work of the Shenzhou's hull plating if they decided to go for the coup de grace.
"Lieutenant, are we still being targeted?"
Gant looked up as his captain spoke.
"Negative," he replied. "At least, as far as I can tell."
He glanced out of the main screen. Dust and flecks of wreckage from the damaged engines swirled around the bridge's bowl-like windows as they continued to draw back.
"I think I can give you a photon torpedo spread."
"They shoot at us, we shoot back at them."
Giorgio shook her head.
"I didn't bring us across the border for a firefight."
She trailed off as the turbo lift at the back of the bridge hissed open and Lieutenant Burnham rushed out.
"Captain!"
Burnham sprinted over to the second officer's station.
"I thought I could help."
Giorgio nodded and glanced at Chithalo, still processing Oliveira's earlier statement.
"The Pelears never had access to our systems while they were on board," she said,
and the Andorian shook his head.
"We would have known about it. Those were more than lucky shots."
"What about Saru and Johar, the rescue team?"
Burnham couldn't bring herself to voice the question that Gant and everyone else on the bridge was thinking.
"Are they still alive?"
His brow furrowing, the lieutenant peered at the tactical scan coming in from the Shenzhou's sensor grid.
I'm reading the shuttle's mass attached to the outer hull of the Pelear ship. Whatever's going on over there, the Yang is still intact.
Captain,
Chithalo drew himself up.
How do you wish to proceed?
They're not giving us a lot of options, said Giorgio. Lieutenant Gant, can we return the favor and knock out their warp drives? Level the playing field?
Not with photons, he replied.
The destructive yield of our torpedoes is too high. We'd blow holes in their space frame if we hit the nacelles. Tight beam phaser strikes could do it, but I'd need to transfer power from the shields for that.
The instant we do so, we give them an opening to fire on us again, said the first officer. If you ask me, they hit us, we should hit back harder.
There are civilians on that ship, said Burnham.
And our own people, too, noted the Andorian. I haven't forgotten.
Preliminary damage reports coming in, called Oliveira. Confirming, we are dead in the water. She couldn't keep a sigh from her words. Burnham shot her a worried look. Any casualties? Dr. Nambu says no fatalities, minor injuries only. Something to be thankful for, then, said the captain.
Small mercies, Chithalo countered. I have little time for those.
A new flicker of light blossomed on Gant's console, and his head jerked up in shock. Across the compartment, he saw Troke reacting to the same sensor reading.
Power flux detected, snapped the Tulian. Reading an energy buildup on the Pelear freighter.
The phase cannons? The missiles?
Chithalo glared at Gant, demanding an answer.
Are they going to fire?
They're not charging weapons, he reported, seeing the juddering returns from the still-fogged sensors. The power flow was too regular to be going into a distributed offensive system. Gant thought the Pelear ship was bringing its shields online, but then he realized what the crew was actually doing.
They're powering up their engines.
Out past the bow of the Shenzhou and the halo of splintered metals from the damage she had suffered, the massive hull of the bulky transport ship was moving, gathering momentum as it came about. Gant and the rest of the bridge crew could only watch as the star freighter presented its stern to them and accelerated away at high impulse. The engine nacelles clustered around the forward section of the big vessel's hull glowed purple-green as they came to full potentiality, and then, with a shudder of twisted light and distorted space, the Pelear ship threw itself into warp speed and left them adrift behind it. For a long moment, no one spoke. Then, Captain Giorgio stood up, breaking the silence with her words of command.
Track that ship. Assign every able hand to repair details immediately.
She turned to study the faces of her crew, briefly making eye contact with Gant. He saw the steel there beneath the softness.
This will not stand. No one takes our people from us.
6. The makeshift prison where the Gorlans had placed their hostages was what remained of the star freighter's long, narrow mess hall. Food fabricators, water purification modules, and raw ration bins from the storage compartments along the longest axis of the room had been removed, dragged away to the lower decks and the refugees in their tent city communities. All but one hatch had been welded shut to keep the captives inside, and a pair of red bands armed with disruptors stood guard outside. Commander Nathal and the Pelear Zell crew clustered together and talked amongst themselves in low tones, ignoring the Starfleet team from the Shenzhou. There were very few of them, the small skeleton staff that had been running the big vessel now all crammed into this chamber. For his part, Saru had been able to convince Vetch to let him recover some equipment from the shuttle, some survival packs, a medical kit, and another universal translator, but anything that looked like a weapon had been confiscated. He hoped that wouldn't matter. Right now, the very last thing on Saru's mind was armed conflict. He sat on one of the hall's steel benches, staring across at a table opposite where Zoxum was working to make sure that Saladin Johar did not die.
The Gorlan had refused to let them use the freighter's own meager infirmary, so the task had to be done here under these crude circumstances. Subin worked with Zoxum, handing over loaded hyposprays, anabolic protoplasar tools, and other items as they were required. The Xano nurse's wrinkled face was filmed with sweat. He had been at this for a few hours now, refusing to step away until Johar was stabilized. The chief engineer lay across a survival blanket on the metal table, his breathing shallow and his chest rising and falling in stutters. Saru sensed someone at his side and glanced up. Chief Petty Officer Yashe stood there, and she offered him an emergency ration pack. The Kelpian waved it away. "Later," he managed.
"We all need to keep our strength up, sir," said Yashe,
and she dropped the pack in Saru's lap. Then her expression clouded.
"What happened back there?"
"I have already explained," Saru said quietly. "They took control of the ship, fired on the Shenzhou. The rest you know."
"How the hell did they neutralize a starship?"
The question came from behind them. Ensign Wheaton looked as worn out as all the rest of them, but he was turning that fatigue into anger. Anger that wanted a target. He glared at Nathal and the other Paliars.
"Who's responsible for this mess?"
"I am." Saru stiffened, and for a terrible moment he thought he had said the words out loud. "I helped them cripple our ship." The inner voice went on, refusing to fall silent. "I delivered us into the hands of the desperate and the violent." He couldn't look away from Johar, couldn't move. A great weight of guilt was pinning him in place. At length, Zoxum stepped back from the table and pulled up the survival blanket to cover Johar's torso. The nurse dosed him with another hypospray, and the injured man grew still.
"How is he?" said Yashe.
Zoxum dropped onto the bench across from Saru's and hung his head as he cleaned off his hands.
"Stable. I did what I could to stanch any internal bleeding, but the halo effect from the disruptor did a lot of damage to the organs down one side of his body. Kidney function, one of his lungs, all badly affected. Nothing we couldn't deal with in the Shenzhou's sickbay, but..."
"We're not on the Shenzhou," snapped Wheaton.
The nurse's head bobbed, and then he glanced at Saru.
"Sir, the commander is unconscious, and I intend to keep him that way. His body needs to rest."
"That makes you the ranking officer, sir,"
Yashe said quietly.
"I know."
Saru's bleak mood threatened to engulf him, and he tried to force it away. He had made a stark choice in order to preserve the lives of his crewmates, and if one were to consider it in the light of pure, exacting logic, his decision had been the right one. Somehow he doubted that Wheaton, Yashe, and the others would see it that way.
"Lieutenant," said Subin, a warning in her voice.
Saru turned to see Nathal approaching with her second-in-command, Hekan, and a few other Paliars. Nathal's default grimace was, if anything, even more deeply ingrained on her face.
"He lives?"
She jerked her head at Johar. "He does," Saru replied without getting up.
"Two of my crew were not so lucky."
She waved in the direction of her officers at the far side of the compartment.
"Their deaths are at your feet, Federation."
"I was not the one who drew a weapon." His reply was flat and toneless. Saru could not find the energy to fight. "Your crewmen did that. You should have ordered your men to surrender peacefully. Then no one would have been hurt."
"Weakling!"
Nathal spat the curse at him.
"The children of Peliarzel are proud. We fight to defend what is ours."
She stared into his eyes.
"You are the cause behind all of this. Why could you not have just gone on your way? Instead, Starfleet had to meddle in the affairs of others, and now we pay the price."
Saru looked up at her. "Shout at me if it will make you feel better. But know that it does nothing to help our shared circumstances." He waited for Nathal to berate him further. Had the Paliar captain seen him assisting the Gorlans to fire on the Shenzhou? If she had,
There was nothing he could do to prevent her from revealing it to everyone.
"Some things about this whole sorry mess are starting to make sense to me,"
said Yeshe, breaking the tension.
"What do you mean?"
Hekan's nostrils flared. Yeshe jerked her thumb over her shoulder in the general direction of the transport ship's warp core.
"Lieutenant Commander Johar and I, we both knew there was a stink off that whole Nadion pulse. That kind of event doesn't come on accidentally. 100 things have to go wrong for it to just happen."
"Clarify," said Saru. He had a bad feeling where the Vakshah's explanation was going to lead, but he let her get to it on her own.
"We're at warp. We've been at warp for hours now, but there's been no sign of that pulse effect reoccurring. I admit, we're not familiar with Pilyar tech, but a warp drive is a warp drive. The basic mechanisms are all the same. At the time, I wasn't certain, but after all the guns coming out..."
Yashay's lips thinned.
"I am now." "You're saying the Nadion pulse was deliberately triggered?"
Subin paled.
"A person would have to be utterly reckless or extremely desperate to do something like that." "As desperate as the Gorlands?"
said Yeshe, glancing at the other technician.
Saru kept his eyes on Nathal. It was most likely their first attempt to waylay this ship, but they failed to account for the full effects of their sabotage.
Nathal's face darkened with new rage.
"Vetch! He betrayed us! He could have killed us all!"
"And when your starship arrived, they saw another opportunity to move against us."
Hekan glanced at Saru.
"Dragging the Federation into their plans along the way."
"We should never have brought those savages on board!"
Nathal stalked away a few steps, her hands tightening into fists.
"How could we ever believe they would accept our goodwill? It is true what is said about them. The Gorlands only respect violence."
"Is that so?" Saru studied Hekan. Of the Pilyars he had encountered so far, the second officer seemed the most moderate.
"Many of my kind consider the Gorland people to be a threat to our safety and our resources on the Alpha and Beta moons."
Hekan broke eye contact.
"When the time came to decide their future, those beliefs were the core motivation. So we decided to find them a home, away from ours."
"There is the proof we were right,"
snapped Nathal, jabbing a finger toward Johar.
"Our gravest fears about those stunted barbarians borne out. They lie, kill, and steal, even when we offer aid. It is all they know."
She summoned Hekan back to her side with a sharp gesture.
"I won't allow it. We are going to take our ship back by force."
Nathal turned a hard look toward the Starfleet group.
"Do not get in our way when that happens."
Saru could feel the conversation slipping away from him again, the same empty feeling that had torn at him when he was among the Gorlands.
"No. No."
He rose to his feet, his hands curling in the air.
"Be careful, Commander. Rash actions brought us to this juncture, and more of the same will only send us down a dangerous path."
Nathal made a derisive snorting noise through her quadripartite nostrils and strode away with Hekan at her heels. He let out a long, exhausted breath.
"This is not how I wanted my first command scenario to unfold,"
Saru said quietly.
"I'm just going to come right out with this and say what we all are thinking,"
Wheaton began.
"She's right."
"That's not what I was thinking,"
muttered Zoxum.
Wheaton went on. "These Gorlands are dangerous, and they clearly have little regard for anyone's lives. They've put everyone on this freighter in serious jeopardy at least twice over. And every minute we're not doing something about them, we're putting more distance between us and the Shenzhou. We don't know what state our ship is in. We don't know who is alive or dead back there."
"The Shenzhou was rendered immobile. It was not destroyed," insisted Saru.
"Right, Lieutenant, you saw what went down. So you, more than anyone, should see the sense in what I'm saying."
Wheaton didn't pause for breath.
"We have no idea where the Gorlands are taking us. What if they're going to execute us when this is all over? Or worse, they could wind up selling us to the Orions, or even the Klingons."
Saru raised his hand in a halt gesture. We must hold back and evaluate the situation before we do anything. He dug deep to find some of the steel he always saw in Captain Georgiou. Rash actions, ill-conceived, will result in more errors. Saru drew a deep breath. I have made that mistake once already, he admitted. But Wheaton was up to speed now, and he barely acknowledged the Kelpian's attempt to slow his train of thought.
But we don't have the luxury of waiting around, am I right? The longer we delay, the more the Gorlands solidify their position. What I'm saying is, we have to be proactive. We have to do something. Somebody has to make a command decision here.
He looked over at the table where the chief engineer lay.
What do you think Lieutenant Commander Johar would say? I think he'd agree with me. Can we ask him? We can ask him, right?
Wheaton turned his attention on Zoxum.
You could wake him.
Yes, replied the nurse. But waking him is not a good idea.
I think he'd want to be a part of this conversation, don't you?
Wheaton scanned the faces of the others, ending with Saru.
Don't you?
I will not be responsible for putting anyone else in undue danger, Saru blurted, trying to maintain control of the exchange.
So you agree,
said Wheaton, misreading Saru's reply.
The chief engineer is a command-level officer. He has the rank to make those kind of choices.
Lieutenant Saru is the ranking officer, began Yeshe.
Yes, but he's...
Wheaton faltered, and Saru got the immediate sense that the ensign had barely prevented himself from saying something disparaging.
I mean, no offense, but the lieutenant is not...
He came to an abrupt halt.
You know what I mean.
I am not what? Saru's thoughts echoed with the question. Not strong enough? Not respected enough? And what if he is correct? Saru drew himself up and looked down at the ensign, marshaling all the firmness he could muster, hiding how hollow it made him feel. I assure you, Ensign Wheaton, I am capable of making whatever command decision is required. Am I clear, mister?
Okay, maybe I should have worded that better, said the ensign. My point is, I was just thinking of the team, sir. I mean, after what you just had to deal with on the bridge, with the hijacking and all, I thought maybe you would...
That I would wish to abrogate my responsibilities? You are mistaken. They were all watching him now, and Saru knew that how he handled the next few seconds would set the tone for whatever would come next. Wheaton carried his thoughts close to the surface, saying what he meant and meaning what he said, but the others, Yeshe, the taciturn Maserite Subin, and Zoxum, were harder to read. If Saru couldn't prove to them that he was a leader worth following, when the time came to follow an order, they might hesitate and make the situation worse. But how could Saru instill that respect in them if he doubted himself the most? The ghost of the choice he had made up on the bridge of the freighter clouded every thought in his head. With effort, he forced himself to push that aside. I am the senior officer, he told them. The decision is mine, and mine alone, to make. Saru met Wheaton's gaze, searching it for the ensign's true thoughts, but finding nothing he could be certain of.
Aye, sir, said the human.
Without warning, the hatch on the far side of the chamber shuddered open, and there were three more red-banded Gorlands crowding at the doorway. Saru recognized one of them as the male with the white-streaked hair along his arms and head, and they briefly locked eyes before his gaze raked over the hostages. The Kelpian knew a hunter when he saw one. The Gorlands entered the chamber and went to the Pelear group, gesturing for them to stand up. The warrior with the white hair looked from one resentful face to another before finally settling on the second officer, Hekan. He barked out an order in his native tongue, and from across the room, Saru felt the invisible flare of his electrostatic aura, a silent flash of anger analog. Hekan was marched out of the group and forced to stand to one side, much to the consternation of her comrades. Then, two of the Gorlands crossed to the Starfleet team, and the same study was made of them.
The white-haired warrior settled on Yashe for reasons Saru couldn't be sure of and made a sharp come-here gesture, his aura flash rippling silently in its wake.
No.
Saru raised a hand and held her back.
You are not going anywhere.
He faced the Gorlands and stepped forward in the engineer's place.
You want someone to go with you?
He asked, even as he knew they would only barely be able to understand him.
Take me, not her.
Yashe shook her head.
Lieutenant, it's all right.
No, Saru repeated. I will not see anyone else put at risk. I will go. The Gorlands seemed to grasp what was going on and accepted the substitution without further action. Saru took a step toward the hatch, then looked back toward his crewmates.
Ensign Wheaton, you're in charge until I return. Keep our people safe.
Wheaton accepted the order without further comment.
Will do, sir.
Heckan threw him a worried look as the two of them were marched away through the hatch and down the corridor beyond.
You may have just volunteered for death, she told him.
I refuse to believe that, he said.
Of its own accord, Saru's hand went up to the back of his scalp and touched the subdermal sacs where his threat ganglia lay. For now, they remained quiescent. No matter what the circumstances, before she entered the captain's office, there was always a similar flash of emotional recall for Michael Burnham. A fragment of memory from her childhood, of each and every time she was summoned to her adoptive father's study for a discussion, whether it was to address her academic progress or her continued assimilation into Vulcan culture. In each instance, try as she might to moderate it, there was always an ember of emotion that years of learning logic and control could never fully conceal. Sarek had been a patient teacher, but he had never allowed her to falter, and even now, Burnham felt that same need to show stoicism before her mentor, to resist the corrosion of any doubts. Of course, Philippa Georgiou was not Sarek of Vulcan. The two of them were poles apart, but the approval of the Shenzhou's captain was as important to Michael Burnham now as Sarek's had been to her young self all those years ago. Her commanding officer rose from the chair behind her desk and gave Burnham a brief smile, but it was forced. Almost a day had passed since the surprise attack from the Pelear transport ship had crippled the Shenzhou, and if the captain had rested in that time, Burnham wasn't aware of it. Standing as rock-rigid as he always did, Commander Chitelo was at a port peering out into the blackness. His antennae quirked at her arrival, and he picked up a datapad lying on the desk before Burnham could see what was on it. Still, she caught a quick glimpse of an image.
Was that the face of a Kelpian? Saru?
She couldn't be sure.
Reporting as ordered, she began.
Any new data from the long-range scans?
The Andorian went straight to business. Burnham shook her head. In the aftermath of the incident, she had been paired to work with Jira Narwani, teaming up with the ensign to repair and enhance the sensors. With the ship adrift and vulnerable, it was vitally important for the crew to be aware of any potential threats while they were still at a distance. Enclosed inside a virtual environment helmet, Jira extended her senses out to watch for alien vessels, while Burnham had worked to interpret the ion trail left behind by the fleeing Pelear transport ship.
The Tholians haven't taken any interest in us yet, sir.
Oh, yes, they have, Georgiou gently corrected. They just want us to think they haven't. She shot Chitelo a look and then went on.
That's not why I asked you to report. We need your opinion on something.
The first officer picked up the thread of the conversation.
You work closely with Lieutenant Saru. You've done so for some time, yes?
Yes, sir.
Burnham frowned. Jira had told her that Saru had gone back to the Pelear ship shortly before it had attacked them, but no one seemed to know why.
Is he...
We do not know the status of any members of the rescue team, Chitelo said bluntly. But certain facts are coming to light, and given your close association with Lieutenant Saru, The captain thought your input would be valuable.
I don't follow, she frowned. I wouldn't say Saru and I are close. I mean, he's...
Burnham found herself unconsciously imitating the Kelpian's hand gestures.
You know how he is.
No, said the first officer. I really don't. I believe your human term is, he's a closed book.
Saru is a private being, said the captain, and I've respected that about him. But the commander is right. Giorgio tapped a keypad on her desk, and you were the last person to speak to him before he left the ship.
A holoscreen blinked into being, showing a monitor's view of the interior of the Shenzhou's shuttle bay. In the corner of the frame, Burnham saw a tiny version of herself in conversation with Saru.
Do you recall what he said?
Did he seem agitated? Added Chitelo. Was his behavior uncharacteristic in any way?
I believe this situation has affected me more deeply than I was aware of.
Saru's words came back to her in a rush.
He was... distracted.
Burnham paused, thinking about it.
No. Actually, the word he used was disquieted. We talked about the situation. We disagreed about some of it.
Be specific, said the Andorian.
The difference between following regulations to the letter and understanding when to bend them.
As the words left her mouth, she stiffened.
I think Lieutenant Saru may have taken your point too literally, said the captain. He was not authorized to return to the Pliar ship. He deliberately went back, I believe, to make contact with the Gorlands once again. You think Saru's actions had something to do with the attack on us?
Burnham blinked, trying to frame that. She knew better than most that navigating the complexities of interactions with an alien culture was difficult, but she couldn't accept that someone like Saru could provoke a violent response, accidentally or otherwise.
Chitelo waved the datapad in his hand. We've been going over our sensor scans of the ship just before the attack. Numerous Gorlan life signs were detected on the upper decks of the ship, along with energy signatures that could be weapons discharges. It's possible that, for whatever reason, Lieutenant Saru's attempts to converse with the Gorlans were the catalyst for them to act in an aggressive fashion.
With all due respect, sir, that's a reach. Do we have proof that the Gorlans were behind the attack? It could have been the Pliars.
Burnham met the first officer's gaze, and neither the captain nor the commander challenged her comment. Chitelo had always been dismissive of Saru's prim, aloof manner, and now she found herself seeing the seed of genuine distrust in the Andorian. He was looking to her to cement that point of view, she realized, and if anything, that made Michael all the more determined to stand up for her absent crewmate. She had her own issues with Saru, that was true, but it didn't seem fair to lay this all at his feet.
Saru isn't reckless, she went on. He's the absolute antithesis of reckless. It's just not in his nature.
Fair point,
allowed the first officer, and he wandered back to the port, resting one hand on the old optical telescope positioned before it on a tripod.
We are attempting to form a picture of what may have transpired on the Pliar ship, and we must accept that Mr. Saru was an unexpected variable in the mix.
It's not like him to disobey an order, said Giorgio,
her gaze briefly turning inward.
Did he?
Burnham looked at the captain.
You didn't literally order him not to go back. I don't believe Saru would return to the freighter without a solid reason.
Perhaps so, but there is another troubling piece of data to consider.
Chitelo turned and studied Burnham carefully.
Just before we were fired upon, Lieutenant Gant detected what appeared to be multiple intermittent weapon locks coming from the Pliar ship. They briefly targeted sections of the Shenzhou, such as the bridge, the crew quarters, infirmary, and mess hall.
He let that sink in. With their shields down, any hits in those areas would have incurred grave loss of life.
Then, at the last second, the weapon locks shifted to direct fire against our warp nacelles, at very specific components of the drive.
Burnham felt her skin chill.
What are you suggesting, sir? Unless the Gorlans or the Pelias had precise technical readouts for a Walker-class cruiser in their databanks, there's no way they would have known where to aim in order to hobble us so effectively.
Captain Georgiou grimly laid out the reality of it.
A Starfleet officer would have known.
"Saru isn't the only one on the rescue team with that knowledge," insisted Burnham.